Okay, thank you very much. The good news for me as a speaker is that the room is not empty. Maybe the news is for those who still want to come in, just the other side of the coin. Okay, I think that everybody here had in the room and still has a very clear perception how hydraulic functions look like. Maybe it was your university teacher, maybe it was one of these numerous textbooks which clearly show you how functions look like. And nowadays what we do is we simulate with very nice programs soil water dynamics, and we need functions for that, and of course we use the functions which are implemented in such nice software pieces such as Hydrus, for example. And then normally we have data, for example for a sand, and automatically we get also then the shape of the hydraulic conductivity function for the sand. So very nice. So for the clay we can repeat the game. Here you see the figures for the clay. So this is how hydraulic functions look like, or hydraulic curves. Now we have some grand challenges, and some of them have been mentioned today. Hysteresis, dynamic effects, which could be somehow treated as a kind of kinetic hysteresis. Hysteresis in the classical sense, maybe as a permanent kind, with many, many different reasons. Stathis Diamantopoulos, who will talk later on this afternoon, and me, we have tried to sample together the different reasons, and we found at least six different physical causes which may cause macroscopically very similar phenomena. Then we have temporarily varying hydrophobicity, which makes things even much more complicated in reality. Think about this exudates from plant roots called mucilage or biofilms, organic matter. We know that they change their behavior in time and maybe also dependent on the state of changing their properties also depends then on other factors again. So very complicated. Then we have shrinking and swelling porous media, which we should keep in mind. Of course, heterogeneity, and maybe worst of all, and also written, I think, almost 30 years ago, up in a review by Don Nielsen, chemical and biological feedbacks, which are almost nowhere here mentioned. So these are really grand challenges, I have to say, and basically I could stop my talk now because I have not great solutions for these guys. Still, I'm somehow convinced that we, with a lot of work and measurements, can go in a good direction. So one of the great solutions, of course, will be that we have to replace the notion of a reference curve by the concept of a reference surface, or as Hans-Jörg termed it, a probability space, a multidimensional probability space. If we extend one dimension, for example, for shrinking or swelling, so as the whole stuff, then the idea is that you have a basic shape function for your hydraulic curve, but this shape is then somehow scaled in dependence of the total volume of the soil. But of course you have much more degrees of freedom and factors which will lead to some kind of scaling, which is hysteresis must be there, dynamic effects must somehow be there, temporal variability must be there. And in a different context and with much higher degrees Celsius, it was mentioned by Galen today that temperature dependence is also a topic, which should in an exact parameterization of such a living surface be there. For me this is almost a living surface which is somehow behaving in space and time and depending on all kinds of factors. It's more or less a monster, and we will see whether we are able to capture that monster finally. So okay, one final point where you all agree is that there's one point we don't have to care, and that is the shape of the hydraulic functions. Of course I am proud to be the only one in this room who has a different opinion there. It's not a grant, it's maybe a small challenge, the proper shape of the pore size distribution of the full moisture range. And so, in the rest of my talk, in the remainder, I will illustrate a bit what's important there. If any one of you heard about my name previously, then it's probably because of my work which I did 20 years ago. Green says always the donut double hump, where I just came to the conclusion that small changes in the hydraulic characteristic near saturation in the wet range have big consequences for certain processes which take place near saturation, in particular if you look on solid transport. Then in the mid-range, it's a disaster, as we saw today also. If you go or compare what you get in the lab with that in the field, what you see here are some points measured in the field, And the design of the field measurement was really done in a manner that we can more or less exclude all these concerns with spatial variability, which is normally a killer argument when you try to compare things. So this is really extremely well measured field data, and what you see is a systematic difference, which certainly has to do with entrapped air, but also has probably to do with the fact that we have dynamic effects, that there are time variable properties in drying soil with organic substances and so on. It's a disaster. The primary purpose of this talk is the dry site, and we came to some interest because we performed at Braunschweig some quite comprehensive evaporation experiments. And if you're interested in that, you have also the possibility later on to see the poster of Sascha Eden, who is also in the audience here, who analyzes these experiments by inverse modeling. But I just want to show two or three very simple observations which we did on these experiments. One of the observations was, if you simulate with our traditional approach drying of such a simple setup of an evaporation experiment, a tensimeter upper position, tensimeter lower position, change with time on a scale, then you get this kind of simulation of the hydrous model. What you observe is more or less that you see it goes down like this, the tension or the metric potential. So in short, in semi-substrate, simulated suctions cannot be followed by measured ones. This was a general observation which we had in sandy soils. The next observation is very trivial and has sometimes, in a very nice manner, been addressed today already. What you see is that water contents go down, and this remembers me to a famous discussion between John Nimmo and Luckner already in the 90s, where people thought about what is our residual water content. It is absolutely obvious, as soon as you start measuring here, then you see that water contents are of course decreasing and not reaching a residual water content. Also, they touch zero somewhere at pH 6.8, 6.9, or maybe 7. It's not so important to me, but they go down. The interesting thing here with this observation will come later. So in short, residual water content is not physically justified in my view, because we reach a state in the natural soil when it's drying where you are below this residual water content. If you look on fine textured soils, then you see even more. If you have only this wet end measurement here derived by the hydro methodology, then you would get a very funny fit here, which is very good, but it has nothing, really nothing to do with the drying soil. The last observation I want to share with you is the shape of the conductivity. If you look on that, we are accustomed to the fact that the conductivity must be some kind of straight line, some on a log-log scale. Log conductivity versus log PF must be a straight line, which is wonderful because you can start to interpret it in terms of fractal dimensions or whatever. But what we frequently observe, and these are six replicates, here all you see how nicely and accurately you can measure, you see that these conductivities often show a bend on the log-log scale. So these are some observations. And of course, we have problems when we want to describe that with standard models. The question is now, is that important or not, and can we do better? So a small solution which I can give you, not a grand solution, is to look for better shaped hydraulic properties. Start with the easy things. Let's replace this function by a function which goes down to zero, and as you see, this has done by a lot of people. One function was shown by, who is he? Grunewald, Grant is here. Oh yeah, Fred and Ting was shown today. So many have shown that the retention curve should go down. The amazing thing is that this is obvious, but the majority of people who really apply these kind of models, even in situations where soils become dry, neglect it. So it has frequently been written up. It's better for dry conditions, but people neglect it. What the interesting thing is here is that if you combine that with this of course heavily criticized and wrong capillary bundle models, even then you see a kind of change in the slope of the hydraulic function. So this is again a Mualle model, for example, and you see already that you go in a direction which is a bit different from what you normally use in your simulations. Then of course, starting with the seminal work of you, Markus, and Danny Orr, we have learned a lot about pores which are not round but may have corners. We learned about film flow, corner flow and so on. And just to put it in a nutshell, what we see is that the net effect is that the hydraulic conductivity function in a region where these edges of the pores become important goes down even in a more flat angle than predicted by the traditional models, by the pure capillary bundle models. So from Stathis Diamantopoulos, we probably will hear later on that a nice side effect in parameterizing this kind of capillary bundle models with angular pores is that you get hysteresis. And finally, a wonderful picture by Denior here. If soils really become dry, then you see that vapor transport might take over and may become dominant, because liquid transport is very restricted then. And this means that what you can do, going back to Philippe de Vries, and very nicely written up by Saito et al., you can say under isothermal conditions, you can map the effect of the vapor diffusion into the hydraulic conductivity function as quasi-liquid conductivity, and if you add all this up, then you arrive at this shape of the function. Okay, and I think this is progress. It is not getting out the fourth digit of the Frankenhoeften alpha, it's just a different kind of structural model. Yeah, because I am often criticized because people say, hey, Wolfgang, why do you care so much about the shape of the function? I say, I'm only interested in systematic effects, not in the number of digits. Okay, now in the remainder of the time, I want to show you, what is that, one finger? 1 minute. Okay. I want to show you how we parameterize that with the least number of three parameters. It's a PDI model, as we call it, because it goes down to Peters, Dorner, and Eden. It's just a combination of the total function of two parts, similar as you have seen before. Then what is really new is that we scale this capillary saturation function in a way that we always, regardless of the parameters, always reach a zero point here, which is by this simple transformation. This is whatever you like as a capillary function, Frankenhoeften, Kosugi, Dorner, Campbell, whatever. Then we add this capillary function, which is according to the observations linearly increasing from the dry point on the PF scale until it reaches its maximum. And here a bit fine-tuning is done with the point here, but I cannot go in details now due to the time restrictions. The total conductivity function is then made up from a capillary part, a film part, and this added vapor. And this altogether gives you a function which behaves very, very nicely, is very flexible, and which is more important to me, is very robust. So it always reaches zero water content at oven dryness. It has what was very important for us, a continuous water capacity function, which is also smooth, has no artificial humps or something like that. For the retention curve, we need no more parameters than the traditional models, the same as with Fred Lung-Tsing. For the conductivity, you have 1 degree of freedom more, and it's very, very robust, which is also important if you have to extrapolate somehow into dry or wet conditions. So we really love it. Okay, now, does it matter? This is almost the last slide. If you have observations from a drying experiment, as I showed you initially, a very, very simple drying experiment, and you try to fit it with a standard Frankenhoeften equation, what you see is that you can match in the phase one of the evaporation, of course, the water flux, and also very nicely the evolution of the metric potentials. But then in stage two of the evaporation for sandy soils, you have no chance to get the thermal drying out, and also you have no chance to get the description of the tensometric things. If you do it with the PDI model, then you get this, and this is almost like faked, but it's real. Okay. Finally, here are three curves. What we did, we simulated a continuous evaporation from a water table which is 1 meter below depth, because it's important, functions look different, but what is the implication for a real application, for a simulation situation? And what you see is if you simulate the whole with the classical Frankenhoeften model, then you would get a steady state evaporation rate of 1 millimeter per year. So this sand is tight, absolutely tight. If you include the vapor diffusion, then you see that vapor diffusion is enough to increase the steady state evaporation to 5 millimeters per year. But if you consider additionally this film and corner flow component, then you see that this can be 4 or 5-fold this one. So normally what we do is we simulate this. If you are clever, we include the vapor diffusion because we know for the situation we have to do it. And maybe this, we don't know, this might be closer to the truth, and I think it's relevant. And with that I conclude, just with one single slide, and with a twinkie here, soil hydraulic properties should be as simple as possible, but not simpler. Thank you very much.
surely a lot of challenges. One quick question.
In you're dealing with a vapor transport at the very front end. Are you dealing with it strictly on an isothermal basis, or are you taking your temperature gradients also into account?
No. This way where you can treat it as a part of the liquid conductivity is really only valid for isothermal conditions. Under non-isothermal conditions, you get relatively big water fluxes, which you have to separately consider. And for that, you have to include the process into the total process description, as far as I know. But Sasha Eason knows better, and he will love to explain your details about that.
Thank you.